Hi everyone, this is John Snyson from World Alternative Media, and today we're joined by Tim Pichot, the Liberty Advisor, and we are going to talk about what's going on with the Federal Reserve. What was happening on you know, their balance sheet? What are they doing? It seems like they're doing some form of accumulation of assets, and what are those assets? And you know, talking about what's happening with the repo, the repurchase operations that they have, and what really that is. We're going to go into detail about that, and then also some reports that just came out today that scared the market first. They dropped almost 1% plus, and then they recovered to over 1% in for some reason, which is almost kind of unknown. When the there's always this scare, Tim, that you know, you see that suddenly they get scared in the economy, and they're getting afraid of a recession, and then suddenly it just disappears for a couple of days again. And then the fear comes back again when there's new numbers that are getting dropped that are just confirming, you know, that we're heading towards a pretty deep recession, in my point of view, that I'm thinking, because we've printed so much money. Now, let's go and take a look at, Tim, at the current market operations, the repo market, and if you go, just give me 1 second, Tim, here, I'll pull it up. And how about you just talk a little bit about what your thoughts are on the repo markets, and then we'll go straight into, you know, what's currently happening there.
Yeah, so right now we do have it pulled up from the newyorkfed.org. And what is going on over here is it shows, you know, the different amount of basically financial transactions that the banks want to have, the ones that were submitted versus the ones that were accepted. And I think one of the kind of the things that stands out to me, and I only saw this chart right before we were live, so I haven't had a ton of time to study this, is it shows submitted with the mortgage-backed security operations, 3,701, this is in millions, but they only accepted 479. So pardon me, what, you know, at a quick glance, what that basically seems that the banks probably have these assets that they want to get rid of. And they're like, oh, hey, the Fed's doing another secret bailout quantitative easing, even though we're not
going to. Tim, this is a quantitative easing. Like, what are we seeing there? Nobody has reported on this that I know, anyways, about the outright, what's called the outright agency mortgage-backed security operations and the outright treasury securities operations. Now, when you take a look at that, they submitted, as you said, $3.70 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities that they wanted to have purchased by the Federal Reserve on October 3rd, which is today, and then only 479 million, well, only 479 million. That's not a small number, to be honest. It's actually a big number, and that's why we're seeing them. You know, how we were talking about, you were talking about this, how the Federal Reserve, you know, their balance sheet is increasing. Well, here you go. Here's the proof in the pudding right here. They're buying mortgage-backed securities again. And then, of course, the if you look at the outright treasury securities operations, now you're looking at $5.88 to $9 billion that have been submitted, and $2.201 billion that the Federal Reserve has actually bought off of whoever is, you know, submitting all this, which is, you know, most likely the banks that are trying to offload risk onto to the Federal Reserve, getting rid of a lot of their bad debts that they had, of course. So here, you just in one day, you're looking at, what is the quick number? It's $2.680 billion that have basically been in a mini quantitative easing. It's actually not a small quantitative easing either. When you look at it, it's 2.68. So that's a highly substantial move. And then if we go and look at, of course, the current operations, Tim, the repo operations, you're looking at, like, they were supposed to have this done. What was the actual move, Tim, that they were talking about? I think they were talking about that they were supposed to be done by
October 10th, I think.
Yeah, October 10th. So they're currently, you know, keep it on going here. Actually, what was interesting, I looked at
Now, who wants to make bets that this is really going to end October 10th? I mean, I'm not willing to go like straight on McAfee and, you know, my, you know what, but I would be a very strong betting man that there is no way that this is really going to end on October 10th.
Yeah. No, what I think is it's just going to be another announcement. It's like, oh yeah, we're just going to continue doing it, you know, just as other, you know, like the NDAA Act and all this stuff that the government is doing, you know, like, yeah, we're just going to, you know, renew the emergency acts. And then, yeah, nobody really, understands or sees that it happens, but they're just going to renew it. What was interesting actually yesterday, the interest rates were as high as 3.20% in the repo market. And that is interesting because that was a whole 100 basis points of 1% off of what it's supposed to be at, you know, with the Fed manipulation that, you know, after it came in, when the markets really panicked with the liquidity crisis back on the 17th, I believe it was, you saw like that whole move up to almost 10%. Now, of course, it had a bigger move again up to 3%. So that's a substantial move again. And it's trying to tell us that, you know, it's not all over. And when you looked at also something called the reverse repos, where they basically are, you know, another way of printing more money. And what you see there is there's more and more participants. It's called participating counterparties that are getting involved in the reverse repurchase operations. Again, so you're seeing that on top of it. And that's might be another feed of, you know, quantitative easing into the markets on top of the of course, the repo operations that are overnight, basically a line of credit that the Federal Reserve puts out for entities that are struggling and that needs to take out a loan. And of course, when this hit up to, you know, 9% there, that was almost at the end of or the start of, you know, the big greater. Well, I believe we've been in a depression since 2008. We just papered over it. But I think it was just the start of something really big. And of course, now you're looking at the constant, you know, supply of liquidity to the markets in order for it to survive every day. Like you're looking at, you know, anywhere from like 30, 40 billion up to 100 billion almost.
Nothing to see here. And the reason why what John was saying that he thinks that we haven't gotten out of recession is because if you take a look at what the, you know, the stated inflation rate is like 2%. Now, if the real inflation rate was really, let's say 6%, and I'm just throwing out a number here, and I don't think that that's actually too crazy of a guess. If the real number was 6% and the economy is growing at 4%, then technically the GDP would then be -2%. And so that's just one of the ways that they rig these numbers. And so not to give, I mean, it's a free book, so I'm not making any money from it. But if you guys want to know more, that's like it's basically a perfect cue of like what the basically my entire book was written on this exact subject. And yeah, I mean, everything, you know, supposedly is fine. Yet, you know, we have, you know, $160 billion worth of liquidity that's been extended to the banks. So maybe it will end on October 10th, because maybe like on October 9th, they'll be like, okay, here, we'll lend you $1 trillion for a year. Maybe I'll be wrong if they do some crazy thing like that. But I think at that point, I would also be right. And so I don't know if you want to get into also, we've got pulling up on screen, got the different around trading economics. We have the yield curve.
Yeah. Before we're going to do that, I think we should listen, like, I want to listen a little bit to what the treasurer at Goldman Sachs has to say about this, and what's going on there.
That's Goldman Sachs and Government Sachs for those of you who
Goldman Sachs. Yeah, exactly. They're everywhere. You know, Mark Carney, Mario Draghi, all these big guys that are running the central banks are former Goldman Sachs guys. Steve Mnuchin, right? So most of the, and Hank Paulson, you know.
Even Steve Bannon from Breitbart even was.
Yeah, there's like most of these guys. So it's interesting. But let's listen to and see what they actually think about what's happening in the markets here. And this is Hammack, which is treasurer for Goldman Sachs.
It's become less and less of an issue as time has gone by. What's the longer term effect of all these daily repo operations? So the daily repo operations have really, really served to smooth the markets out. We had this very acute stress that happened on September 16th as reserve dropped in the system. And the Fed stepped in pretty aggressively to make sure that liquidity was brought into the system, particularly over quarter end. And so we navigated through that really smoothly. I think what the market's going to focus on from here is what's the permanent solution. So they're coming in every day. And what we really want to look at is what's going to be this longer term solution that'll get us through the fourth quarter.
But what are those longer term solutions that you believe that the Fed does have to implement, and how hard will it be to get those solutions done? I think that there's a little bit of concern in the market that the Fed won't be able to announce something by the end of this month.
Yeah, that's it is a concern.
The Fed has announced that they'll be engaging in these open market operations through October 10th. On October 9th, we'll get the FOMC minutes from the last meeting. I expect there'll be some reference in those minutes about this event, given that it was happening just as they were going into the meeting. And from there, we'll get an expectation as to whether or not they'll be growing the balance sheet at the end of the month. On their October 30th meeting, I think the market generally expects that they'll continue with balance sheet growth that would put more reserves back into the system and take some of the collateral out.
How can it convince the market that this isn't, though, quantitative easing under another guise?
That's a great question. Quantitative easing was
We're just going to take out a
different
source and figure out different words.
The actual fundamentals are the same. Yeah. They're growing their balance sheet. They're adding to securities in the portfolio. But I think the goals behind it and what they were trying to accomplish was quite different.
Way different.
The balance sheet has always grown. So you went into the crisis.
This money printing is not like last time.
$100 billion. Obviously, quantitative easing through the crisis took it up to $4 trillion, it's been coming down.
Last time central banks only had to print $16 trillion. This time it's going to be way more.
Reserves back into the system that they want to have the balance sheet.
Those are rookie numbers.
That is enough. I had enough of this bullshit. Come on. You know, this is so interesting, Tim, because he's saying that, you know, yeah, but the interest, you know, their balance sheet has come down. Well, you know, where did it come from? Like, it's not even a third of the way down of what it used to be before they started all this quantitative easing, buying all these assets. And now we're seeing literally, like, they're talking about the repo operations, but then they have side operations on top of that, you know, the after buying of these mortgage-backed securities and treasuries to prop up the market. Because also what's happening right now with the United States is that the U.S. is, you know, doing over $1 trillion plus almost $1.1 trillion in deficit spending currently. And all that treasury debt has to be bought by someone. And of course, there's not too many actors that are willing to buy U.S. debt anymore. So who's the buyer of last resort? Well, that's going to have to be mostly, you know, of course, local, you know, pension funds within the United States, pension funds and organizations like that.
And I actually think that's going to be the major catalyst for, you know, when finally things go is when the pensions, I mean, basically, they are damned if they do, damned if they don't. So there's two things that can happen. Either, I guess, three things. Either rates stay the same and we're at the slow bleed that we're in right now, or rates go up. If rates go up, they're holding on to all of these bonds already. And what happens is when the interest rates go up, the underlying value, it acts like a teeter-totter or a seesaw. So if rates go up, the underlying values of the bonds go down. And so if you have a 10-year bond and rates go up 1%, you've got $1 million, and boom, you just lost $100,000 of principal. If rates go up 2%, then your $1 million is now about $780,000. It's called interest rate risk. No one that's retired right now or about to retire has ever had to worry about that in their lifetime, because basically since right around the time John and I were born is right around the time when the rates started going down. And so people have only experienced rising or decreasing interest rates for the most part. And I'm sure there'll be some baby boomers who are commenting, oh, BS, I remember back in 1980. Well, guess what? I said retired or about to retire. So you probably weren't retired, because I know I've made this comment before, and I got people that are trolling me about that. Like, you don't even know what it was. Yeah. So anyways, what is going to happen is if the rates do go up, the principal reduction would be so great that as they're pulling money out, there's no way they're ever going to be able to return to the levels they were at before. And if the rates end up going down, then all the bonds they're holding aren't going to pay anything, and they're also going to be screwed. So, I mean, basically, there's no way out of the situation. I wrote a letter to actually, funny because I emailed this client again today, but I remember this guy, Michael. I emailed him in 2011, right around the time of the, I forgot if it was Moody's or S&P that downgraded, even though John and I just talked about this the other day. And it was right around the time of the downgrade, and I mentioned this exact scenario, and I got in trouble because my email was being monitored. They're like, you can't make a prognostication that that the Fed is stuck in between a rock and a hard place because you are just making wild assumptions. And like, boom, okay, yeah, my wild assumption was right. Every single financial expert was, you know, besides John and, you know, a few other people out there, you know, was wrong. So, not that I'm taking any victory laps or any of this stuff, but I really do think it's a pension. I mean, at this point, I can't believe that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, $17 trillion in negative global interest rates didn't scare people away. You know, printing all these trillions of dollars didn't scare anybody away. Having this $160 billion operation didn't scare anybody away. So I don't know. Maybe it's when the pensions get to be, maybe it's when either when the pensions bust or when you have, maybe interest at $1 trillion. So even if rates are like 0.1%, and then the interest is still at a trillion, maybe that's when the sheeple will wake up. But it's just, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've overestimated how smart people are, and I think that generally most people are pretty dumb about this stuff and didn't give them a lot of credit to begin with. But they've really surprised me, and obviously not our audience. I'm not talking to you guys. You guys are listening to us, so you're smart and you're doing your own research on this stuff. But the average person out there has no idea about any of this stuff. But sorry for rambling on. I wanted to give John a chance to rest his voice over there. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, no, it's let's go back to this, because I just want to explain, actually, with what we just described, the actual outright agency mortgage-backed securities operations and the treasury operations, because what that says is just with the mortgage-backed securities part of it, they have a plan to purchase a maximum of $3.3 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities per day.
Mike Tyson had a good quote about a plan one time. He said, everyone's got a plan until I punch him in the face. And so that's exactly what's going to happen with this too. Sorry.
the Fed gets punched in the face by the free market economy. That's what's going to happen.
Maybe they get their head chopped off by the, all the helicopter money they're going to be thrown out there.
Yeah, some stupid guy was, sticking it like they're down
on
the
ground,
right?
I don't know. Maybe Bernie Sanders is in the hospital. So and actually, he was in Vegas. So maybe he got scared thinking Josh was over there again. Going to heckle him, so but no, don't wish anything wrong with Bernie, but is the progenitor of the helicopter money. I did see a really funny meme the other day. It's like in 1996 you had it was Elizabeth Warren adopted the Cherokees to get ahead, then in 10 years later she adopted herself as a Democrat to get ahead, and now she's adopting herself as Bernie Sanders to get ahead, just taking his strategy. Anyway, sorry about that.
Yeah, but no worries. But this is what's happening. It's basically like a shadow QE that's going on right now. On top of, like, we're not talking about the repo operations at all there. We're talking about what's called the outright purchases of MBS, mortgage-backed securities, and treasuries from the United States Treasury. So the debt that the U.S. is printing. So this is breaking news, guys. What's happening here? We are actually, well, it's not breaking news really, because it's been going on since the 30th. It's been going on since the 30th of September. But still, it's actually news, because nobody's really talked about this. And it's important to get that out there, that there's a shadow QE going on right now on top of the repo operations. So they're hitting it from several places here to try to, paper over and hide again this, massive liquidity crisis that are starting to unfold here with, of course, a lot of problems. And what I'm working on, and what I'm going to have Tim involved in as well, is we're working on a big, big report on the global economy and what's going on there. And particularly what we have focused in on, Tim, was the corporate sector, because there's so much bad corporate debt there. And we were looking at, I was looking at numbers of how much corporate debt is rated junk. It's almost, 30 to 40% that are rated junk, but then also like close and near to junk is rated another 30, 40% on top of that. So like almost 75 to close to 80% sometimes of corporate debt from non-financials. So this is like the corporations, regular corporations that are not, the big banks. They were, they're struggling. They're really and this is, coming at a point where, can we even trust these rating agencies? And then their ratings are, terrible already. Like Moody's, S&P.
Who owns them. You got guys like Warren Buffett, who owns them. Yeah. And then Warren Buffett then also owns a lot of the big banks. I mean, he's got big shares, I think, in, I know Bank of America, I think, and obviously Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs back in 2008, he had a big sweetheart deal with them as well. So he actually owns a bunch of these banks. And yet here he is now being the arbiter of, deciding what's going on with these banks. And the other thing that you mentioned, these bonds, well, if you have all these triple B rated bonds, which is the lowest grade of investment quality, if they go from triple B down to double B, then you're going to have billions. And I mean, I'm sure John has the numbers for us, but you're going to have just a ton of bonds that now all of a sudden are going to be forced liquidated out of pension funds that are mandated mm-hmm. a certain percentage in investment grade bonds. You're going to have all the big insurance companies, a lot of the ETFs that are investment grade bonds. And then it's going to have, and then the selling is going to get more selling, and it's going to tie into a live stream that John and I did a few weeks ago about how ETFs could be a big or index funds could be a big catalyst for what's coming ahead. The other thing you have in terms of shadow QE, just the fact of money, of how money comes into the system is a shadow, basically stealth quantitative easing. Because what happens is the Treasury, first off, it's ridiculous. The Treasury doesn't just, you know, print the money themselves if they're going to do it. But then it's bad enough that they just don't even just borrow directly from the Fed. So what they do is that the Fed, you know, that you have the banks who are then borrowing money from the Fed, and then the banks, and you've got the Treasury who then takes the money from the banks. And then so let's say, you know, you're the Fed and you are lending money out to Bank of America hypothetically at 1%, and then they turn around and then lend it back out to the US government at 1.25%, and they get, you know, a guaranteed, I'm just making up the numbers right there, but, you know, a 0.25% arbitrage, or in this case 25% arbitrage for doing nothing, which in my, you know, I'll take that deal if I can get it. Like, okay, I know that you definitely want to buy this, and you're going to sell this at X, and I can sell it to you for more than X. But, you know, the fact is through the US government. And then who owns the Federal Reserve? It's the banks themselves. And the Fed gets 6% interest of all the...
7%.
Are you sure? Maybe we'll...
Okay. I forgot if it's 6 or 7% per annum, it says in
and
the Federal
Reserve. And you can find it on the Federal Reserve. So next time John talks, I'll look up. But you can find this on federalreserve.org, or I don't know if it's org. Or I don't think it's .gov because it's not a government agency. But you can find it directly on the Fed's website. And they spin it as, oh, we give back 94% of the profit or 93% of the profit, instead of saying, you know, we take 6 or 7 off the top. And, you know, if people knew this, they'd be outraged. That's why you had Henry Ford said, if Americans ever understood the banking system, there'd be a revolution before the morning. And he said that, I believe it was like 1903, before 10 years before the Fed. And so didn't get any better since 1903. I can tell you that much.
Well, so another thing that I'm looking at right now, Tim, on top of all this, well, actually, before that, I want to talk about, for example, like we were talking about rating of corporations. One thing that I found very interesting, Tim, and I've been looking at a couple of corporations already. I was looking at some auto corporations, looking at their balance sheets, looking at their ratings and so on. One that really stuck out to me wasn't an auto company. It was, of course, me and Josh have reported on this before, General Electric, which used to be, you know, one of the biggest corporations in the United States. They are, you know, have a terrible, like they have, I think it was only six quarters that had a positive return for General Electric, and all the other ones since 2009 has been negative. And you know what's really interesting is that this corporation is actually almost about to be rated medium grade by Moody's by being, I think it was BAA1, it's rated, which is ridiculous when you look at, you know, their balance sheet. Well, yeah, they've been offloading debt. They're down to 92 trillion, to billion right now in debt. But again, that doesn't really matter because they have so much debt. Their whole business model is, you know, falling apart as, modern times are coming.
One of the reasons, I know exactly why, one of the reasons, because it was, I believe the guy was Henry Markopoulos, who's the same guy that blew the whistle on Madoff, came out recently, and some of the criticism from GE, just to play devil's advocate, was that, you know, he was hired by these hedge fund guys to put out this report, but, you know, oh well. But GE had a unit, a subsidiary called Genworth. Genworth was a long-term care company, and basically the actuaries, and I, you know, I'm a financial advisor, when I'm not a libertarian activist, also helping people plan their finances. And so I have seen the quotes, and Genworth was like almost always the cheapest by far. And unfortunately, Arizona, you've only got like one choice. And when I was in New York, you had more. But, you know, the long-term care market is basically dead. And the reason it's dead is because these companies had to keep a certain amount in investment-grade bonds. And now that those bonds pay nothing, they had to jack the premium. So, I mean, I've seen premiums that are basically, you know, 200-300% higher. I've seen people, I think John, I had some clients in John Hancock where they went back and had to raise, you know, even people that had already purchased policies raised them by like 20-30% because they couldn't just afford what's going on. So there is massive, massive, massive unfunded liabilities that they have through Genworth, which is a long-term care company. And I actually have sold the Genworth product to one couple before and let them know, you know, some of the risks that were associated with that. But it was, you know, so much cheaper that it's one of those cases of, you know, if it's too good to be true, And a lot of people think that these things will end up getting, you know, bailed out, especially since, you know, it's basically government electric. We talked about government sacks, but it's the long-term care. People are living longer. You know, a lot of the policies back in the day, you know, were, you know, you could, you know, pay, they were, the benefits were amazing. Like you could have like 10 years of coverage, whereas today, a lot of times you're only buying 3 years of coverage. And then in some cases you can then even get on, this is getting into a whole boring conversation nobody cares about. But I do have some firsthand experience with, Genworth and GE and the long-term care market. And the long-term care market, I can tell you right now, is basically a complete mess and it's completely dead. So if you bought a policy 10 years ago, congratulations, you're doing well, you made a good decision. But, you know, going forward, it's very, very difficult to have to plan for these things.
Yeah, no, definitely. And and of course, on the other side, there's a big slowdown happening in the economy on top of all this problem. And of course, GE, among others, have been doing share buybacks, which is, you know, to buy back their own shares to prop up their share price to then give their investors higher dividend yields, of course. And that's also, the higher dividend yields are forced upon by the printing of a currency by the Federal Reserve and other central banks. So you're looking at, you know, just a triple, quadruple whammy here for whatever direction you're looking for the monetary system. And of course, I just want to mention, I sent you a link from MarketWatch. It just came out. It was Fed Kaplan's willing to back more rate cuts if necessary. So this is just Federal Reserve's Kaplan. He just had a speech today, and he said that he's willing to back, of course, more rate cuts, which is coming. There's going to be probably, who knows, if this, you know, continues, there might be more drastic cuts, like 0.5%. But we'll see. But we had some turbulence in the markets over the last 2 days, Tim, as well, you know, with the whole trade thing going on with the European Union, with Trump and so on. And it was some severe hits. You know, you had the DAX, I think, was down, like the German stock exchange was down 3% almost over day over day. And then the whole market was just trembling. And then suddenly gold was squished down, you know, to below 1500. And it came back up again today, or over the last 2 days, all the way up to 1511 again. So you've seen that so much volatility in the markets right now because there's so much uncertainty. Nobody's knowing what really is going on. There's talk about the trade. Oh, it's all about the trade wars. That's all what's causing this. And then you see manufacturing PIs, you know, that's coming out from the United States. You're seeing different ones. If we go and look at the Chicago PMI, for example, the Chicago PMI is starting to look closer at, you know, we had a crisis back in 2016 there where we almost had another financial crisis, but of course they papered over that one. And now we're getting close to those levels again, and we're getting close to the levels of 2000 and 2009 and 8 with, you know, manufacturing slowing down. You also have the non-manufacturing PMI from the United States. That one is down.
Well, I do have it pulled up right now. I've got it pulled up right now. In September 2019, it shows it slipped down to 47.1. I think these are numbers that basically, I think the last time it was this low was like March 2009. And basically like in the depths of the recession. There's one more thing I want to point out real quickly going back to GE, is I did pull up an article that says, this is from March 2018, GE's $24 billion buyback boondoggle. And then it goes on to say that the average share price that they bought their stock back was at $30.30. And if you take a look at today, I think I just had it up here. It was like $8, I think. $8.71. And so here you are, you know, the reason the CEOs do this is because that now there's less shares outstanding that automatically then increases the earnings per share. A lot of times the CEOs get paid nothing salary wise or hardly anything, but their compensation is tied to stock. And so then they end up, you know, reaping, I almost said raping, but you know, that'd be another one too.
Well, it's pretty close.
Reaping all the benefits. It's funny. One thing, whenever I go to type in my phone fascist, it always like autocorrects it to racist every single time. And a lot of times, like in context of talking about liberals, I'm like, yeah, this sentence does work, but it's not the sentence I really wanted. But anyways, getting back to the PMI index. Sorry, I just want to.
It's not only the United States that are struggling. It's like I looked at PMI numbers. I've been keeping an eye on them for a very long time now, over the last 3 months. And PMI numbers
are trending down. The German one
was
crashing big.
Oh yeah,
we talked about that last episode.
Yeah, they're crashing heavy, right? So what you're seeing is a global slowdown. It's all this cheap money from the central banks. They're all implicit in this massive bubble that they created again, you know, printing money out of thin air. dropping interest rates to near zero. And now, of course, they couldn't even get it above 2.5% before they had to cut it again. And look at, you know, most European nations have negative yielding debt now that they're, you know, shoving into the pension funds.
They need some Viagra because they're having trouble getting it up. I mean, it's been 10 years and they still can't get it up.
But go ahead, Tim.
And then also I've pulled up the German manufacturing recession deepens, growth outlook darkens, and it's saying that this is the weakest data they've had in Germany in the past 10 years. And wasn't Trump basically holding his hat on, the manufacturing coming back to America? And I do believe, I did talk with, you know, a CEO the other day of, you know, doing a lot of stuff overseas and they are in China and bringing a lot of stuff back here. And that's just one anecdotal story, but, you know, it's everything. You know, unfortunately, though, Trump didn't come at things from a philosophical standpoint, and, you know, everybody and Americans just do not have, I'm American, but, you know, just do not have the gall or do not have the, you know, wherewithal to withstand any short-term pain. So everything has to, so we can't plan long-term. Everything has to be short-term. And I do agree that there needs to be some pain, but you can't tout up, you know, we're going to have 4, 5, 6% growth rates from here to, as far as the eye can see, and everything is going to be going great. When at the same point you're going to have a trade war, because that is going to have negative consequences. And if that does need to be done, then you need to just level up with people and let them know what they can expect. But if you promise them the moon and then you deliver them, the ground floor, they're not going to be very happy with that. And so I think that, unfortunately, is one of the problems I have. And then if we do end up going into recession, I can pretty much guarantee that Trump is not going to be the president. And that's not me wishing any ill will on anybody. That's just me as a political commentator who, you know, predicted him winning and, you know, have a signed Trump hat. So, I mean, everyone's saying that, I'm some big TDS Trump derangement syndrome person. I mean, I, you know, spent $3,000 on targeted Facebook ads to convince people to vote for him. So, you know, unless you did that, then I don't know what you have to complain about, because I helped get him there. But I'm calling things out. And I think, and one of the main things that I got pissed at is the fact that he put Jerome Powell in there. And now what's one of his biggest problems that he admits is freaking Jerome Powell. So, you know, I was right on that one. You guys can go back to the podcast from the day that he came out where I was just, I was swearing. It's not a family friendly one. I was swearing quite a bit because I was so upset that he picked, because he had one awesome pick. I think the guy's name was James Allison, head of M&T Bank, hates the Federal Reserve, even though he's a bank CEO. And I thought, I was like, oh man, if this guy gets in there, this would be awesome. Cause you know, he had like Rick Perry, who hated the EPA, then in charge of the EPA and a lot of other stuff like that. So I thought it could happen. And we had that tweet from Trump in 2016, where it's like, you know, what's the guy's name? Lion Ted Cruz missed the vote and audit the Fed. It's so important that we audit the Fed. And, you know, threw a dog whistle to all of us. And now I feel like he just, you know, sort of pimped us out, played us out. And now there's nothing he can do to get rid of him. And I said from day one, if he does 1,000 things, if he wants to get 1,000 things accomplished and he gets 999 done, but he doesn't, you know, change the ball of the Fed, then I don't care about the other ones. And unfortunately, it's not some, you know, crazy thing that everybody thinks that, you know, he's going to nationalize it, or he's really going to send everyone to the Fed at Guantanamo Bay, or he's going to have Ripple come in and have that be the new current. I mean, I see so much stupid stuff out there all the time. And guess what? None of that stuff's going to happen. And everyone that's waiting for it to gonna happen, you guys are the problem, because everyone needs to be taking action right now.
Well, personally, Tim, I think the SDR is going to be their outcome of all this. I think they're going to start printing SDRs to bail out all the central banks.
I think they're going to have their own Libra, which is the Libra is basically the SDR. If you look at the underlying basket, and I had a video the day before the white paper was released predicting that it would be modeled after that, not even knowing. Yeah. And so that's up there on the WAM channel that you guys can check that out as well. But they wanted that we should have a one world government, whether it's through consent or conquest. That was Paul Warburg, who was Daddy Warbucks in the play Annie. And he made that quote. And I think what they're going to do is they're going to get things really bad. But they wanted to have Hillary in there because they wanted to have the guns gone. They wanted to have a big social credit score like they have in China. And then not that they're going to be able to get the guns, but anyways, you know, they want to have you okay with trading your dollars for this BS, SDR, Federal Reserve.gov coin. And then we can then track trace your value. And Tim and John and Josh were talking crap about us. Boom. We're going to dox them, or boom, we're going to make sure that, we're going to take away 20% of your money or all of your money. And that is the goal. That is where things are going. Look what's happening in China. And this should be, yeah, I get upset about this because this is everybody's future. This is my children, your grandchildren, your kids that aren't even born yet. This is their future at play here. And we're having central bankers who are trying to rob everybody. So, you know what, Greta Thunberg, you want to have your future stolen? Well, guess what? The real thing is they want to have a carbon tax to be the thing that steals everybody's future.
But what's interesting about Greta is that you said that the banks will save us.
We played that clip last time.
We did it.
You couldn't believe it when I said, and actually it was King. Give a shout out to Kingsley Edwards who sent me that clip. So thank you, Kingsley.
Thanks, Kingsley. Yeah, no, it's just unbelievable what's going on right now. But I got to get going soon, Tim. So let's wrap it up here. And then maybe we'll take like 5 or 10 minutes at the end, taking a couple of questions before we leave. But let me just finish this report off. So this is John Snyson and Tim Petrov signing up from World Alternative Media. Find the truth, be the change.